greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I am the net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. And I welcome you all here. We get together every Sunday night at around 8 o'clock to exchange information, to learn from each other, teach each other, and hopefully entertain each other. Again, I thank you for coming back here this Sunday night when we try and do this all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. Okay, if you want to reach me by email, that would be for mailbag questions, for TechNet puzzle questions, to offer your services for some technology in the news that you're more aware of than we are, and want to tell us the facts behind something going on in the news, or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at a space or NASA-related story, any of those. You could, of course, contact Paul yourself. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, as always, I cut and paste interesting articles and YouTubes that I've seen throughout the week, and I put them on a link page. You can review them at your leisure. You can get to them by just typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring up the link page. It's available 24/7. We have a chat room available. Sometimes it's busy, sometimes it's quiet. You can get to that by typing into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com. And we offer an audio stream on the Internet of the TechNet. We used to only have it live for the technical net, but some people asked me to keep it live the rest of the week. So if you're curious what's going on at Glen Oaks Repeater, but you don't have a radio nearby, you can just type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you up the audio stream. And as always, I like to remind people that MyKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. It has more than a million visitors. It has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who have either moved away from the area or unfortunately become silent keys through the years. And their wisdom is not totally lost. It still exists on audio files on Mike's website. So avail yourself of that as well. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned for tonight. Okay, a very, very short opening comment, and then we will have questions and comments and topics for discussion. As always, you know, first guys in have the ability to be the first guys heard. So hopefully people will ultimately learn to check their clocks and see when it's 8 o'clock, turn on their radio, set everything up so that they can throw out their call sign and get to be one of the first people on the list. There's a little give and take. There's a little, you know, politeness that, you know, if some people are tight with their time, the people who are scheduled ahead of them will allow us to rearrange the schedule. And, you know, people who sign in late can do their question or comment early. But it's best for you to just try and make it on time. What can I tell you? So don't argue with me. If you show up at 10 o'clock and you want to be heard immediately, if there's, you know, five people who are on this list, I don't know how many people will be on the list. So keep that all in mind. As always, we prefer at least the first few questions to be amateur radio related, since this is an amateur radio repeater. But we will accept any technological science questions, topics, concepts as best we can. We'll deal with them. So keep that all in mind. So that's what we got planned. That should take us to approximately 10:15. Paul will join us, WS2N, with the SpaceNet report. And that should take us approximately to 11 p.m. when I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So if the repeater and my shack and myself don't have a hiccup or anything, we've all been known to, that's what we got planned. So we'll see how this goes. So I'll drop for a second, and I'll give you my short little comments for the past week. Okay, not much with artificial intelligence. NVIDIA's stock has slowly creeped back up to about half of the loss that it sustained with DeepSeek's effects upon it. Everyone in the AI community is hedging bets and you know, promising things, and we'll see if they deliver on those promises. So it's a little bit of a week of turmoil, but things have been somewhat more stable than the week before, thankfully. So there's not really that much. No one has announced any kind of fantastic advance in the art in the last week, and we'll see as the weeks progress, because I'm sure there will be announcements and there'll be claims and there'll be all kinds of things that go bang in the night. Anyway, that's my 2 cents worth on artificial intelligence for this week. Hopefully future weeks we'll have something more significant to discuss. If anyone has any comments on AI for tonight before we move on to the usual questions and comments, feel free to hit that push to talk. Okay, I will take that as a not really. So, we will open everything to the usual questions, comments, topics, what have you. Please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name, your call sign, and you don't have to tell me what the question or the comment is. Is it amateur radio related or is it not amateur radio related and such? And we'll put you on the list.
And ham radio related. WA2VDH, John, medical electronics question. So I'll defer to ham questions.
Wes and John recognize. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Okay, perhaps a little bit later on people will arrive and want to put their name on the list. Some people have kind of, every year, kind of questioned me, gee, you doing this next on Super Bowl? And, you know, I respond surprisingly, even going back to Dick's days, never really had that much of an impact on us hams. You know, we've had these technical nets on during the Grammys and the Oscars and the Emmys and the Super Bowl and all these things. And yet, you know, people still come by, fortunately, for me and other people. So, Wes, do you mind if I take John first? I know you really want to get on, but, you know, John, I'm sure his question or comment is not going to be that long anyway.
Thanks, John, for me. No problem at all.
Okay, John, what's your question?
Okay, fine business. Okay, thank you, Wes. My question is about CyberKnife medical electronics, about how they actually, as I understand it, it's a very narrowly focused beam of X-rays. I had some procedure done a few years ago, and I noticed the equipment was manufactured by Varian, and I know they their specialty was microwave tubes, especially klystrons and stuff like that there. So I'm just wondering, what is the difference between the CyberKnife, where they sharply focus the X-ray beam, versus a plain old X-ray tube, which just takes basically a diode where they accelerate electrons with several thousand volts and smash it into to an anode. How is it that they actually focus the X-ray beam in that CyberKnife equipment?
Okay, not exactly my expertise. Since I'm not a surgeon, I would be willing to bet that most surgeons don't quite know how their knives work anymore. I do not know the technology involved. As you mentioned, it's a matter of focusing either, you know, it depends on how you want it, what you want to call it. They also call it a gamma knife because the definition of gamma and X-rays is problematic. I've mentioned it before, and probably it sounds kind of inane to most people, but it just annoys me, that originally in the 19th century, for the most part, the difference between gamma rays and X-rays were not the frequencies. They could be the exact same frequency. The nature of the definition at the time was that gamma rays are created from the decay of radioactive products, and X-rays are due to high-energy electrons. So it was the source that determined what they were. With astronomy, you're never quite sure what the source is anymore, so astronomers decided to change the definition for themselves, and they have their own weird definitions. According to astronomy, everything but hydrogen and helium are metals, which chemistry wouldn't agree with, but it's a different field. So sometimes they call them gamma knives, sometimes X-rays. They're focused. How they exactly design the high-energy electron-emitted X-rays into a focused a beam as opposed to a generic X-rays that have been around for more than a century that use a much more blunt X-ray generator because they're just trying to cast a shadow onto a photographic film. Unfortunately, I can't tell you. I mean, if anyone out there happens to know how gamma knives focus the high-energy electromagnetic waves, feel free to educate us. Okay. I was worried that no one was going to have the faintest idea or two. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, the simplest thing is to Google it, because I'm sure there's a lot of interesting pages that discuss exactly, you know, what kind of a linear accelerator they use to produce those finely focused, gamma or X-rays. But the details are something that, you know, probably they didn't have those things when I trained in the 80s. I don't remember when this technology came out. And again, I'm not a surgeon by profession. I'm a general internist. So we don't really use those types of devices. So it never came up.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I know it has something to do with microwave tubes or microwave energy, because the unit that there, I know it was manufactured by Varian, and I know they have a lot of their specialty, as it were, is a lot of microwave tubes. I know they've been manufacturing klystrons and magnetrons and tubes like that for years. So I know it's got something to do with microwave energy using to accelerate the electron stream. Maybe it's like a little cyclotron, I don't know. But yeah, I'll have to Google it and see if I can find any more information. But again, thanks, Roy. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. I understand it utilizes a linear accelerator. I remember reading something about that.
Yeah, that would make sense, because I know they need microwave energy to actually accelerate the electron stream. So that would make sense.
Yeah. A lot of great technology out there. I wish I knew all of it. It's a process. You know, I mean, now tonight I'll start reading up on it, so hopefully I'll have a somewhat better idea if it ever comes up in conversation the next time.
Oh yeah, just one other final comment. As far as the Super Bowl interfering with this tech net. You're talking to a person who used to get very, very upset when Watch Mr. Wizard was preempted by a baseball game. So enough said. Hi.
Yes, indeed. One of the many, many reasons I love this hobby. Your brothers in arms. One of the first things that I sort of noticed when I was a kid listening is because I started as a shortwave listener. Everyone has their own little origin story. In the old days, it probably was partially Signal Corps people and shortwave listeners. And then as time went on, it was CBers. But I was a shortwave listener. And the thing I loved about hams, among other things, is you didn't kind of hear endless discussions of how the last game went. Because I never quite understood I went to high school with Lee Mazzilli, who is a baseball star. I think we were in the same room once during graduation practice. I didn't know him. He didn't know me. I didn't particularly care how his life went. I didn't wish him any ill. But I never understood people who just kind of fixated on these people who didn't know them, who really probably didn't care, and were making a lot of money and having a good time. So good for them. But I don't know. And so, you know, it was always curious to me that the hobby, the people practicing the hobby very often seem to be completely disinterested with the sports events surrounding them. It's one of the things that endeared this hobby to me, among many other things.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Roy. I know exactly what you mean.
Yes, indeed. Okay, well, thank you, as always, John, for participating. And let me just check. Is there anyone who just kind of arrived late who wants to put their name on the list for tonight? Please hit that push to talk.
Maybe it's a radio.
Is it on a subject we just discussed?
Yeah, Ed, we can discuss that.
The radiation that he mentioned, is that what they use to go after a cancer question?
Yes, it's one of the uses for that, for the gamma knife, is to cut away malignant tissue.
I try and learn something every day.
Yeah. Well, I often say that, you know, sometimes if you sleep late, you miss the announcement of a new discovery that's going to change the world. We live in curious times. You know, civilization went through thousands of years where not a heck of a lot happened. And now every day, you know, the whole world changes. So, yeah, that's the beauty of technology. That's the beauty of the age that we live in today. I hope we all appreciate it, because there were centuries that were quite boring to live in and dangerous, very dangerous. But, you know, between the dangers was boredom. Okay, there were a few other people that doubled with Ed. Do you want to tell me who you are? Try again. One more time. This is AC2GS. Anyone else want to have their name on the list for tonight? Please hit that push to talk.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee
Golf Business. Say again, and what's your first name?
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf, Sam.
Oh, okay, Sam. I assume you have a question about amateur radio tonight, right?
Tonight I'm just listening. I'll save those
for
the 2-meter net.
Oh, okay. Well, welcome aboard, Sam. Very good. Well, let's take Wes's series of questions. What do you got for us tonight?
interaction, a lot of stuff. And I'm going to try to make it as big as possible. But first, a comment about the linear accelerator, which is used for medical application. It delivers X-ray or electron beams to the region of particular tumor. So it is that much more like a focusing light in your lens, medium mirror, that you could have it focus at one spot. Similarly to that, we could use the parabolic antenna for the satellite TV, and we have the same focus. But electron microscope does it remarkably well, and that's a basic core for the linear accelerator. You have any comment as to that?
Nothing in particular. I mean, the concept of focusing electromagnetic waves is understandable, I hope, to most, but the problem is technologically it's relatively simple to focus radio waves or light using totally different techniques. For radio waves, you just have radiators that that focus the energy, but antennas don't really do that beyond a certain frequency range. So for visible and ultraviolet and infrared, you have to use laser technology to do it. And for X-rays and gamma rays, you need yet another technology. So those are not, you can't have kind of a something similar to a parabolic mirror for X-rays or gamma rays. So the method that apparently is used for the sake of these gamma knives is a linear accelerator. Again, this is just something I read in passing. I don't really know the details, so I wish I did, but I don't. But the method uses a linear accelerator, which really isn't at all similar to the way that light waves are focused and collimated, and not like the radio waves are. So although the basic premise is the same, the methodology to accomplish it is significantly different, that you can't extrapolate one for the other.
I absolutely agree on that. Beam of electrons in electron microscope is electromagnetically or magnetically focused. But talking about collimators are attenuators. They not do anything good apart from that they do not allow the particles. They are not in line with the holes in the collimator to pass from the other side. But you know.
Okay.
Okay, so, no, that was because you mentioned the word collimator. That's why I decided to give a few words about the collimator. Okay, the first subject to discuss is Hamcation. Instead of Hamvention, Hamcation 2025 is open since Friday. So it was open since Friday to 1 p.m. today. And some interesting stuff that was there. You can see a number of YouTubes that are available on it. So it was in 4603 West Colonial Drive, Orlando, Florida. And new radio ICOM IC7760 was there too. So we're talking about $6,200 stuff. And then the new name for unnamed transceivers is a presentation in Japan. It is now the Kenwood TMD750A. Again, TMD750A. It is new tri-band mobile Kenwood transceiver. And what is good about it is Tri-Band, T-Star, VHF, UHF, APRS, DNC, Wi-Fi, and Bluetooth in one. So that would be about that. The new, the another one, so a transceiver that wasn't there, is FTX-1F, which is HF, 50 megahertz, 2 meters, 70 centimeters, all mode, QRP. So compare it to my Kenwood 2000, I have two of them, one with the removable head and one that is 1 watt only. Let me drop. Okay. So, Kenwood 2000, we're talking about year 2000. Now we have a year to the 2024. So it's 24 years old. I decided that I think it's a time to replace those two transceivers. I have to sell them with something better. And of course, one of the transceivers of my choice would be the ICOM 7760. I never had any expensive radio in my life, so one time in a lifetime. Okay. Now, talking about FTX-1F, this is interesting stuff. The price for it is unknown. What is known is you have to deposit $35 and buy it for the price that is unknown yet. So if you decide not to buy it, you're losing your $35. So it is, again, transceiver portable ESU-FTX-1F with everything that my Kenwood has plus extra. The only difference is that it is QRP 10 watts maximum power, 4.3 inch display, and it does have built-in lithium ion battery. A little bit more about it. Hold on, let me switch to it. Okay, so single sideband CW, AM, FM, C4 FM digital mode. Apart from D-Star or whatever I mentioned before, so that was the D-Star, VHF, APRS, TNC, Wi-Fi, and Bluetooth. Okay, now the loudspeaker built in, quite good quality, at least what they say. And if you work from the battery, you can have only 6 watts. But if you plan to have an amplifier, 1 or 2 kilowatts amplifier, 1.5 kilowatt amplifier to be in line with FCC requirements, then it doesn't make any difference at all.
Wesley.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if the FCC changed the rules since last I understood them. There is a maximum gain on linear amplifiers, or at least there was when I got my expert systems, because it was kind of designed, I think, by an Israeli and built by an Italian company, and they had to actually put an attenuator as part of the input because the maximum gain of the amp was beyond FCC regulations. So simply having a linear amplifier that can take a QRP signal and boost it to a legal power would probably violate those gain limitations of amplifiers at the FCC. At least they had them about 5-6 years ago. I don't know if they changed the rules.
That's a good question, Dr. Roy. Very good question. I had no idea. But thank you for telling me that.
No problem. It's an archaic type of a law, and it predates solid-state amplifiers and probably the boom of QRP radios and such. So inevitably, I assume that someone's going to change it. But I do not recall hearing any announcements of any intention to do that yet. With expert systems, they kind of play games sometimes, and they say, would you like the attenuator place put in or not put in? You can put it in yourself if you want, which is their way of saying, or not, type of thing. So I don't know. I've never heard of the FCC fining anyone for operating a higher gain amplifier, but it is a legal issue.
Okay. I have to check it out, and if you find some information about it, I would appreciate it if you voice it on the TechNet, next TechNet. How to recognize HF financial trading station signals on shortwave. Now, this subject was years ago touched by Dr. Roy, but I see the need to talk about it again because not everybody knows about it. So let's say you have a frequency of 14 megahertz, 14 just above the ham radio band, and then you have a 40 megahertz wide signal. I'm sorry, 40 kilohertz wide signal. And sometimes 70 kilohertz wide signal. And then you think, what the heck, what is that? So, that would be good if you talk to Roy, explain why do they do it? They have every possible means to send the data with fiber optic or whatsoever. Dr. Roy.
Okay, before I get into that, you know, Google, as I've always said, is sort of your friend. Google was more of our friend in the old days, unfortunately. Google is still somewhat. So it's basically 97.317 of the FCC rules and regulations that you can't have an amplifier with a gain of greater than 15 decibels. So it's apparently still an issue. Hasn't been fixed yet. Getting back to the previous, I remember doing a story on this because it fascinated me in the good old days of my doing science talk. The point of the exercise is...
NTL.
Yes? Say again? Okay, I don't know what that was. Anyway, you would sort of think that there are fiber optic cables and there are all kinds of interesting cables that connect us with Europe and such, and you would sort of think that that's about as fast as you're going to get a signal from one continent to another continent. But in point of fact, this was about, had to be 5-6 years ago, they were doing a lot of research and they were going to develop using RF links, just skywave propagated RF links, in order to cut down the latency of repeater nodes. These fiber optic cables require repeaters to amplify the signal and get it farther across the bottom of the ocean. And that introduces a small but important latency delay that airwaves have less of. So it, actually there's less of a delay in transmitting information for arbitrage, for the value of stocks and monies and such over skywaves versus, ocean cables. So there was a lot of research and there was development, and to this day people use RF transmissions to get the data across the ocean at a little bit faster, and that small amount of incremental decrease in latency is worth millions of dollars to arbitrage investors. Wesley?
Yeah, that was somebody else, but we've been noises. That's why I didn't talk. Didn't pick up the microphone.
Okay. Well, like I said, the fact is that as sophisticated and gee whiz as our transatlantic cables, they do introduce a little bit of an extra delay that SkyWave RF propagation doesn't. So you can actually take advantage of that ever so slight additional time to make millions of dollars on arbitrage.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's not millions, but billions. So we're talking about sending data. Takes time. Now, traveling data takes time over fiber or internet. Then data being received and processed take the time. Now you have a receiver. It is much simpler. So you're naturally trying to win milliseconds, but a good fraction of a second. Tell me if you agree with that.
Well, I don't know the differential. I just know it's profitable. I don't know how profitable. I don't think they kind of advertise that aspect that much. But it's just the nature of, we don't really think in terms of the cables have built-in repeater circuits that introduce that latency. We sort of, I think most, the average person generally doesn't think that, it doesn't think in terms of having repeaters through a signal, whereas in a transcontinental SkyWave transmission, you don't need to have any kind of a repeater. So the delay of decoding it and then resending it again introduces enough time that it's quite profitable. But it's not dependable because, as we all know, just because you got a radio doesn't mean that you're going to pick up a signal wherever you want. So it introduces some erratic aspects to it. It's certainly not as dependable as the transcontinental cables are. They have a delay, but that delay doesn't change, and you can depend upon, you know, getting information back and forth, whereas with RF, it depends upon what's going on the ionosphere. You know, some days I'm sure the radio method doesn't give them a dollars of profit, but in the long run, it seems to be very profitable to them.
Thank you very much, Dr. Roy, for that. And the next one is, best antenna for mesh, plastic and helium, or helium. So, we have a two popular option for creating long-range, low-power wireless networks, and both technologies have certain features. That's mostly for areas where you have a difficulty or lack of connection. The one key difference between helium and mesh static is their range capabilities. Helium utilizes a decentralized network of hotspots to extend its coverage, allowing devices to communicate over long distances. And in contrast, mesh static relies on mesh networking to create self-healing network that can cover large areas, while helium may offer graded range in certain scenarios. So mesh static mesh networking approach can provide more reliable coverage in challenging environments. Now, one of them is made for power consumption, and the other one is only using power of the battery when it's being called to. So there is a significant difference for power consumption between two of them, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about the antennas. What caught my attention is that there are being offered numbers of antennas for both of the networks. Let me drop. And to exit. For both of the networks. And they say this antenna is good and this antenna is good. It actually is a vertical dipole.
And then they say, well, this antenna is good. It's a Yagi antenna, 5 elements or 3 elements, whatsoever. And this is good for static, and this is good for helium. What the BS? I mean, what the heck is there? Antenna doesn't care how source is made and how, as long as it is a source available for an antenna. Any comment? And to XGS.
AC2GS. Well, I'm not quite sure how this topic came up, because I wouldn't combine or compare mesh tastic with helium. It's kind of like comparing an apple with a hippopotamus. I mean, they're grossly different. I mean, they utilize radio waves, but that's about all. And, you know, as you mentioned, antennas don't really care about intent. They care about whether it's stationary or mobile, and what frequency it's supposed to be resonant, and whether it's supposed to be omnidirectional or highly directional. So the idea that a technology like mesh tastic or helium requires a different design for an antenna just because of its existence strikes me as weird. Also, what's weird is helium, as far as I'm concerned, is a grift. It's a con. It's a complete confidence thing. I had a long chat with Andy, WA2CVL, may he rest in peace, years ago, because he went to some retailer, I forget exactly if it was a diner or something, and the guy had an helium router that he was going to make millions in cryptocurrency, because helium is a Internet of Things interface, or was designed to be. So the idea is, you have something that isn't hooked up to the Internet, but it sends a signal to helium. Helium receives it in its router and then sends it into the Internet, and everyone gets cryptocurrency and everyone becomes a millionaire, but you have to buy a router to be in the game, and they never made profit, so they never gave anyone anything. So it's pretty much a kind of it's a solution in search of a problem, because most people have cell phones that are connected to cell towers that have connections to the Internet. So no one really needs an Internet of Things interface from helium. So that's a grift. Mesh tastic is an amateur radio type of a project where, if you have enough of a density of hobbyists, you can develop a mesh. The problem with a mesh is that there is an inherent minimum density required. So if you get together 5 guys in Brooklyn, and 3 of them live across the street from each other, and the other 2 are miles away, that's not a mesh. I don't know what you'd call it. It's not a mesh. So the MeshTastic is a non-commercial hobbyist experimentation that's great for high-density experimenters and terrible for low-density experimenters. And helium is just a grift, as far as I'm aware.
Thank you for that information. I can add that helium cost is significant, so there is a consideration for what to go with, and mesh-tastic, so it's more expensive than mesh-tastic, whatever. The helium hotspot can be expensive to purchase and maintain, especially if you need to deploy multiple hotspots to cover the large area. So in the contrast, mesh-tastic devices are more affordable and can be easily deployed in a mesh network configuration. As I mentioned before, the helium hotspots require constant power, and you need a power supply, right? But in mesh-tastic devices, they are designed to be energy efficient, allowing than to run on battery power for extended period of time. Okay.
Okay, but
the next one. The next one we have. It's a kind of discussion. Why can't you buy, or you cannot buy, cheap and good, any radio or just anything at all? So, I made some sort of text that I would like to read here and make sure that there is a disagreement or agreement to it. Because, there are people smarter than me all around. So, we like to start to complain that our fresh radio camera, car, or coffee maker doesn't have some future you'd like to expect to have there. So let's say you bought the ham radio and it's say, wow, that would be good if we have this. Okay. So, and it would be good if you have that for the same money. So, Aircraft K4D is a 5-year-old product, and it costs twice as much as Japanese ICOM 7610. But if you look at the spec, we see that both of them have a 6 dB 2 receiver dual SDR, the same ADC front end, chips. So electronic is the same, to digitize to 16 bits, so both of the radios are dual channel 16-bit machines. So in order to explain what is 16 bits, well, I rapidly close with the hand my mouth 16 times per second, you're going to hear something like that, something like that. But the faster the rate, the less distortion is heard. Multiplexing in the telephony was done the same way, and then that multiplexing took place in the commercial radio networks, and then they were trying to do the same with the spread spectrum, but it didn't work as well. So probably a few guys skilled in art, they've heard about it. Okay, so both use the same ADC chip, but the rest of the radios execute differently. And of course, Elecraft is more superior. So if you make it too good, you saturate the market, or let's say the device will be at the lower bottom of much more expensive devices. And if you saturate the market, what are you going to be selling? So what Kenwood is going to be selling, what ICOM is going to be selling, what Nikon in the photography or a Canon is going to be selling if they give you the best at the first time. So you can have the same raw minerals to turn it into good German quality radio, refrigerator, TV set, or car, or make from a Chinese often ugly junk. Here is why Electraft is more cost expensive than Japanese ICOM. So labor and material used to make the device in Japan or any other country doesn't make the price, as long as Americans or Europeans for whom the device is addressed don't see it as luxury but as regular everyday item. So we're looking at the amplifier and we see $5,000. Well, I would like to have it, but so much money. But then you're looking at something that costs $1,000 or $900 is a Chinese made, and then you say, you know what, I can buy it. And then you're waiting for the stupid one who's going to buy it, and then he's not going to tell you the truth because he lost. Of course, you're going to have Chinese stuff that made in China, but it's not Chinese. It's Hewlett Packard, let's say, who made in China, and they made a good device, or any other manufacturers. Now, could Chinese do good? Yes, they could, for the good money. Do you agree with that, Dr. Roy?
Well, I don't know if it's just for good money. You need an infrastructure of quality assurance. Chinese culture modern day is sort of to get by on the bare minimum. So if you don't have inspectors checking your work and forcing you to do the best that you can, you often get loose screws and loose cold solder joints and all kinds of fun stuff. So as you said, Apple, up until recently, I think made most of their stuff in China. They are starting to kind of shift production out of China. But and their stuff is very high quality. It's high quality because they made absolutely positively sure that they had a very strong quality assurance program and inspection, and they didn't tolerate sloppy work. They paid reasonably well. I don't think they paid inordinately high sums of money, but they also paid for guys to check other guys' work, which is important in China, because unfortunately, every so often, you know, Chinese companies have been known to water down baby formula with poison, which doesn't strike me as a particularly productive way of making a profit, but, you know, go figure. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of reasons why costs are different. Labor is an issue. For people's perception, when you buy an American brand, you assume a better quality, sometimes better than it is, sometimes not. Different. But there's a lot of factors. Generally speaking, though, and I just heard this discussed earlier this morning on 10 meters, radio stuff is dirt cheap these days. You know, some guy was discussing, who might be listening right now, that Collins's, when he was a kid, cost about the same price as a car. Now, you know, can you imagine someone buying a radio that costs the same as a modern car? No, because, you know, no one would tolerate such nonsense. So the price of electronics has plummeted, even American and even German, simply because of solid-state design and just, you know, nowadays you can develop, you can build an integrated circuit that's a radio on a chip. That's why Baofengs weigh about 3 ounces, because they have very few components in there. So, again, this is a kind of glorious time. Now, you could use the same mechanism to build garbage or build very good stuff. You know, again, you could get radios with specifications far better than anything you could get in the 50s and the 60s for a significant lower percentage of a person's take-home income. So, you know, I kind of disagree that it's all junk and it's overpriced. Some of it is, but a lot of it isn't.
Good point. So, my understanding is, in Japan, it costs you 10 cents, but you can sell it for $10,000. If there is a buyer, if he wants to pay, you're selling it for $10,000. If it's good, and if he's satisfied, you're going to sell more. So the price is not based on the cost of labor and material and technology, but it's made on ability for the buyer to pay for it and need for the buyer to pay for it. Agree or not?
Yeah, the ultimate meaning of value is what the other guy is willing to pay you for it. You know, a shiny new a copy of Action Comics number one with Superman on it. The raw material value for something like that is less than a dollar. But it has value because there are people out there with a bank account of over, you know, $10 million who are willing to empty that bank account in order to get that copy of Action number one. So that's what value is, detached from the expense of creating an object. It is simply the perceived worth to a guy willing to buy it. That determines the value of everything.
I agree with it. I'm going to give you an example. In order for the buyer to buy it for any price, the buyer has to have the money to pay this price. So the manufacturer knows that in this particular part of the world, they can sell for this price. So, for example, 36% of Russians do not have access to gas. And Russia is exporting gas and oil. They burn the trees to cook and heat houses. And many retirees still earn less than $100 per month. So California has a cost of living that is higher than most of the U.S. and must provide higher earnings for those guys. So domestic and foreign businesses want to sell their products, including imported radios, for as much as they are able to sell. But because California is in United States of America, not in Russia, the lowest price for that radio stays the same around. So anybody in America can buy for the same price or similar price. So Europeans might pay more due to 21% of combined tax on everything they have. It's called VAT. VAT, whatever. However, they do not earn more than Americans. It's just different tax structure. So for the rest of the world, this radio might be a luxury, and that is why Chinese junk sales are better there.
Well, I don't know. I don't quite agree with it. VAT is conceived of, I think, differently because it's a tax. It's not the price of the item. It may reflect the increased price of the item. If you notice, very often when price is announced in the United States, it's usually the same in pounds, which pounds is almost never equal to dollars. So most of the time it means that the usually Japanese manufacturers are taking a slight hit in placing the UK price as the same number of pounds as it is dollars in the United States. So there's all kinds of economic situations. You can't, with things that are advertised regularly and published all over the place, it's a little bit difficult to kind of squeeze more money out of rich people. Where you can get away with it and then some is with pharmaceuticals. The United States pays the most for pharmaceutical drugs. You go across the border to Canada, and the prices drop something like 30-40% in many cases. So, but because no one really knows the price of drugs unless you have to go to your pharmacy and such. But with the price of radio equipment, it's advertised all over the place, and hams actually talk to each other. So you tend to generate a lot of unfavorable publicity. If you decide that the Germans are having a very good year this year, so in Germany the radio costs 20% more, for the hell of it. So, yeah, but ultimately we hams tend to be a little bit on the cheap side. We like bargains. And so that's why a lot of people are buying Chinese radios and all kinds of things. They still, to me, have warranty issues. I don't know what happens if my Belfunk fails, I just throw it in the garbage and move on. But if I invest $1,000 in a Chinese radio, and I don't do it through an American distributor, I don't know what I'm going to do with that, because I've sort of been in that situation before with the Chinese companies, and it's basically tough luck. So, I mean, again, the fact that it costs so much less. But if you play Russian roulette too many times, eventually you put a bullet in your head.
Well, we have a Chinese Nano VNI. That is just a killer product due to its price range. So I have a few vector network analyzers. It costs enormous amount of thousands of dollars. And they put something that is $100, $60, and whatsoever. So it's a killer product due to its price range, but for us, it is like having an electric toothbrush. Why in the real rural areas of Russia they still build their own homemade transceivers like we did in the 70s. Nothing wrong with it. It makes them more educated in electronics, but life is too short for fixing your own tire if the tire shop is around the corner. That was the words of my friend KG2WGB, John, and